Chapter 5. Johnny went home. He didn't dare go back to the cemetery. It was Saturday evening. He'd forgotten about the visit. "You've got to come," said his mother. "You know she likes to see you." "No, she doesn't," said Johnny. "She forgets who I am. She calls me Peter. I mean, that's my dad's name. And the place smells of old ladies. Anyway, why doesn't Grandad ever come? She's his wife." "He says he likes to remember her as she was," said his mother. "Besides, it's Marky and Moe's Saturday Spectacular. You know he doesn't like to miss it." "Oh, all right. We don't have to stay long." About 10 minutes after Johnny had gone, the phone rang. Grandad dealt with it in his normal way, which was to shout, "Phone!" while not taking his eyes off the screen. But it went on ringing. Eventually, grumbling and losing the remote control down the side of the cushion where it wouldn't be found for 2 days, he got up and shuffled out into the hall.
"Yes? He's not here. Gone out." "Who? Willard? Is it? Never. Still doing the conjuring tricks, are you? Haven't seen you about the town much lately." "No." "Right. That's right. I don't get out much myself these days. How are you in yourself?" "Dead, I see. But you've got out to use the telephone. It's wonderful what they can do with science. You sound a long way off." "Right, you are a long way off. I remember that trick you used to do with the handcuffs and the chains and, well, nearly did. Yes. Yes. Right, I'll tell him. Nice to hear from you. Goodbye."
He went back and settled down in front of the TV again. After a few minutes, a small worried frown crossed his face. He got up and went and glared at the telephone for a while. It wasn't that Sunshine Acres was a bad place. As far as Johnny could see, it was clean enough, and the staff seemed okay. There were bright murals on the walls and a big tank of goldfish in the TV room. But it was more gloomy than the cemetery. It was the way everyone shuffled around quietly and sat waiting at the table for the next meal hours before it was due, because there wasn't anything else to do. It was as if life had stopped and being dead hadn't started, so all there was to do was hang around. His grandmother spent a lot of time watching TV in the main lounge, or watching her begonias in her room. At least, his grandmother's body did. He was never certain where her mind was, except that it was often far away and long ago. After a while, he got even more depressed at the conversation between his mother and his grandmother, which was exactly the same as the one last week and the week before that, and did what he always did, which was wander out into the corridor. He mooched towards the door that led out into the garden, staring vaguely at nothing. They never told you about this ghost stuff at school. Sometimes the world was so weird, you didn't know where to start. And social education and GCSE maths weren't a lot of help. Why didn't this sort of thing happen to anyone else? It wasn't as if he went looking for it. He just tried to keep his head down. He just tried to be someone at the back of the crowd. But somehow, everything was more complicated than it was for anyone else. The thing was, Mr. T. Atkins. He probably wouldn't have noticed it, except that the name was in the back of his mind. It was written on a little curling piece of paper stuck in a frame on one of the doors. He stared at it. It filled the whole world just for a second or two. Well, there could be lots of Atkinses. He'd never find out unless he knocked, though, would he?
"Open the door, will you, love? My hands are full."
There was a large black woman behind him, her arms full of sheets. Johnny nodded mutely and turned the handle. The room was more or less bare. There was certainly no one else there.
"I see you come up here every week to see your gran," said the nurse,
dumping the sheets on the bare bed.
"You're a good boy to come see her."
Yes.
"What was it you were wanting?"
I thought I'd, you know, drop in to have a chat with Mr. Atkins. Inspiration seized him.
I'm doing a project at school about the Blackberry Pals.
A project. You could get away with anything if you said you were doing a project.
"Now, who were they then, dear?"
Some soldiers. Mr. Atkins was one of them, I think. Where?
Well, he passed away yesterday, dear. Nearly 97, I think he was. Did you know him?
Not really.
He was here for years. He was a nice old man. He used to say that when he died, the war'd be over. It was his joke. He used to show us his old army paybook. Tommy Atkins, he'd say. I'm the one, I'm the boy. When I'm gone, it's all over. He used to laugh about that.
What did he mean?
Don't know, dear. I just used to smile. You know how it is.
The nurse smoothed out the new sheets and pulled a cardboard box from under the bed.
This was his stuff, she said.
She gave him an odd look.
I expect it's all right for you to see. No one ever visited him, except a man from the British Legion, regular as clockwork, every Christmas. God bless them. They've asked for his medals, you know. But I expect it's all right for you to have a look, if it's a project.
Johnny peered into the box while the nurse bustled around the room. There were a few odds and ends, a pipe, a tobacco tin, a huge old penknife. There was a scrapbook full of sepia postcards of flowers and fields of cabbages and simpering French ladies dressed in what someone must once have thought was a very daring way. Yellowing newspaper cuttings were stuck between the pages, and there was a small wooden box lined with toilet paper and containing several medals. And there was a photograph of the Blackberry Pals, just like the one in the old newspaper. Johnny lifted it out very carefully and turned it over. It crackled. Someone had written in violet ink a long time ago the words,
Old comrades, we're the boys, Kaiser Bill. If you know a better old, go to it.
And there were 30 signatures underneath. Beside 29 of the signatures, in pencil, someone had made a small cross. They all signed it, he said quietly. He must have got a copy from the paper, and they all signed it.
What was that, dear?
This photo.
Oh, yes, he showed it to me once. That was him in the war, you know.
Johnny turned it over again and found Atkins' tea. He looked a bit like Big Mac, with jug-handle ears and a second-hand haircut. He was grinning. They all were. All the same kind of grin.
He used to talk about them a lot, said the nurse.
Yes.
His funeral's on Monday, at the Creme. One of us always goes, you know. Well, you have to, don't you? It's only right.
He dreamed on Saturday night. He dreamed of Rod Serling walking along Blackberry High Street. But as he was trying to speak impressively to the camera, Big Mac, Yolus and Wobbler started to peer over his shoulder and say things like,
What's this book about, then?
And,
Turn over the page. I've read this bit.
He dreamed of thumbs and woke up and stared at the ceiling. He still hadn't replaced the bits of cotton that held up the plastic model of the space shuttle. It was forever doing a nosedive. He was pretty sure other kids didn't have lives like this. It just kept on happening. Just when he thought he'd got a grip on the world and saw how it all worked, it sprang something new on him. And what he thought was the whole thing, ticking away nicely, turned out to be just some kind of joke. His granddad had mumbled a very odd message when Johnny had arrived home. As far as he could understand, Wobbler or someone had been making odd phone calls. His granddad had also muttered something about conjuring tricks. He looked at his clock radio. It said 2:45. There was no chance of going back to sleep. He tried Radio Blackberry.
Yowza, 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 yowza! And the next caller on Uncle Mayor Jim's bodacious problem corner is...
Johnny froze. He had a feeling.
William Stickers, Mad Jim.
Hi, Bill. You sound a bit depressed to me.
It's worse than that. I'm dead, Jim.
Wow, I can see that could be a real downer, Bill. Care to tell us about it?
You sound very understanding, comrade.
Well,
of course he's understanding, thought Johnny as he struggled into his dressing gown. Everyone phones up Mad Jim in the middle of the night. Last week he talked for 20 minutes to a lady who thought she was a roll of wallpaper. You sound totally sane compared to most of them. He snatched up his Walkman and switched on its radio so that he could go on listening as he ran down the stairs and out into the night.
And now I've just heard there isn't even any Soviet Union anymore. What happened?
Seems to me you haven't been keeping up with current events, Bill.
I thought I explained about that.
Oh, sure. You said you've been dead. But you're alive again, right?
Mad Jim's voice had that little chuckle in it that it always got when he'd found a real ding-dong on the line and could picture all his insomniac listeners turning up the volume.
No, still dead. It's not something you get better from, Jim. Now...
Johnny pattered around the corner and sped along John Lennon Avenue. Mad Jim was saying in his special Dealing with Loonies velvet voice,
So, tell us all out here in the land of the living, Bill, what's it like being dead?
Like? Like? It's extremely dull.
I'm sure everyone out there would like to know, Bill, are there angels?
Johnny groaned as he turned the corner into Eden Road.
Angels? Certainly not.
Johnny scurried past the silent houses and dodged between the bollards into Woodville Road.
Oh, dear, said Mad Jim in his headset. I hope there aren't any naughty men with pitchforks then.
What on earth are you blubbering about, man? There's just me and old Tom Bowler and Sylvia Liberty and all the rest of them.
Johnny lost the thread of things when a sticking-out piece of laurel hedge knocked his headset off. When he managed to put it back on, it turned out that William Stickers had been invited to request a record.
Don't think I know the red flag, Bill. Who's it by?
It's the Internationale, the song of the downtrodden masses.
Doesn't fire a neuron, Bill, but for you and all the other dead people out there everywhere tonight.
The change in Mad Jim's tone suggested that William Stickers had been cut off.
And we're all dead sooner or later, ain't that the truth? Here's one from the vaults by Michael Jackson, Thriller.
The street lamp by the phone box was alight, and the little pool of light was all there was to see, unless you were Johnny. The dead had spilled out onto the road. They'd managed to drag the radio with them. Quite a few of them were watching the alderman.
This is how you have to do it, apparently, he said,
moonwalking backwards across the frosty street.
Johnny showed me. It's certainly a very interesting syncopated rhythm, said Mrs. Liberty. Like this, you say.
The ghostly wax cherries on her hat bounced up and down as she twirled.
That's right, and apparently you spin around with your arms out and shout, Ow!
Said the alderman, demonstrating. Oh, no, thought Johnny, hurrying towards them. On top of everything else, Michael Jackson's going to sue me.
Get down and, what was it the man on the wireless said?
Said the alderman.
Bogey, I believe.
They weren't actually very good at it, but they made up for being 80 years behind the times by sheer enthusiasm. In fact, it was a party. Johnny stuck his hands on his hips.
You shouldn't be doing this.
Why not?
Said a dancing dead.
It's the middle of the night.
Well, we don't sleep.
I mean, what would your descendants think if they could see you acting like this?
Serve 'em right for not visiting us.
We're making carpets,
shouted Mrs. Liberty.
Cutting a rung,
corrected one of the dead.
A rug,
said the alderman, slowing down a bit.
A rug, cutting a rug. That's what Mr. Benbow, who died in 1931, says it's called. Getting down and bogeying.
It's been like this all evening,
said Mr. Vicente. He was sitting on the pavement. In fact, he was sitting about half a metre above the pavement.
We found some very interesting stations. What exactly is a DJ?
A disc jockey, said Johnny, giving up and sitting down.
He plays the discs and stuff. Is it some kind of punishment?
Quite a lot of people like to do it.
How very strange. They are not mentally ill or anything?
The song finished. The dancers stopped twirling, but slowly and with great reluctance. Mrs. Liberty pushed her hat back. It had tipped over her eyes.
That was extremely enjoyable, she said. Mr. Fletcher, be so good as to instruct the man on the wireless to play something more.
Interested despite himself, Johnny padded over to the phone box. Mr. Fletcher was actually kneeling down with his hands inside the telephone. A couple of other dead people were watching him. One of them was William Stickers, who didn't look very happy. The other was an old man with a mass of white hair in that dandelion clock style known as Mad Scientist Afro.
Oh, it's you, said William Stickers. Call this a world, do you?
Me, said Johnny. I don't call it anything.
Was that man on the radio making fun of me, do you think?
Oh, no, said Johnny, crossing his fingers.
Mr. Sticker is annoyed because he telephoned Moscow,
said the white-haired man.
They said they've had enough revolutions to be going on with, but would like some soap.
They're nothing but dirty capitalists, said William Stickers.
But at least they want to be clean capitalists, said Mr. Fletcher. Where shall we try next?
Don't you have to put money in? Said Johnny. Mr. Fletcher laughed.
I don't think we've met,
said the white-haired man, extending a slightly transparent hand.
Solomon Einstein, 1869 to 1932.
Like Albert Einstein, said Johnny.
He was my distant cousin, said Solomon Einstein, relatively speaking.
Johnny got the impression Mr. Einstein had said that line a million times and still wasn't tired of it. Who are you ringing up? Said Johnny.
We're just having a look at the world, said Mr. Fletcher. What are those things that go round and round in the sky?
I don't know. Frisbees?
Mr. Vicenti just remembers them. They go round and round the world.
Oh, you mean satellites?
Whee!
But how do you know how to...
I can't explain. Things are a lot simpler, I think. I can see it all laid out.
All of what?
All the cables, all the satellites. Not having a body makes them a lot easier to use, too.
What do you mean?
For one thing, you don't have to stay in one place.
But I thought you... Mr. Fletcher vanished. He reappeared a few seconds later.
Amazing things, he said. By word, but we shall have fun.
I don't understand...
Johnny!
It was Mr. Vicenti. Someone living had managed to get through to Mad Jim. The dead, with much laughter, were trying to dance to a country and western number.
What's going on?
Said Johnny.
You said you couldn't leave the cemetery.
No one has explained this to you? They do not teach you in schools?
Well, we don't get lessons in dealing with...
with dead people, I mean.
We are not ghosts, Johnny. A ghost is a very sad thing. Oh, dear, it's hard to explain things to the living. I was alive once, and I know what I'm talking about.
Dead Mr. Vicenti looked at Johnny's blank face.
We're something else, he said. But now you see us and hear us. You're making us free. You're giving us what we don't have.
What's that?
I can't explain. But while you're thinking of us, we're free.
My head doesn't have to spin round and round, does it?
That sounds like a good trick. Can you make it do that?
No.
Then it won't.
Only I'm a bit worried I'm dabbling with the occult. It seemed daft to say it, to Mr. Vicenti in his pinstripe trousers and little black tie and fresh ghostly carnation every day. Or Mrs. Liberty, or the big bearded shape of William Stickers, who would have been Karl Marx if Karl Marx hadn't been Karl Marx first.
Dear me, I hope you're not dabbling with the occult, said Mr. Vicenti. Father Kearney, 1891 to 1949, wouldn't like that at all.
Who's Father Kearney?
A few moments ago, he was dancing with Mrs. Liberty. Oh, dear, we do mix things up, don't we?
Send him away!
Johnny turned. One of the dead was still in the cemetery. He was standing right up against the railings, clasping them like a prisoner might hold the bars of his cell. He didn't look a lot different to Mr. Vicenti, except that he had a pair of glasses. It was amazing that they weren't melting. He had the strongest stare Johnny had ever seen. He seemed to be glaring at Johnny's left ear.
"Who's that?" he said.
"Mr. Grimm," said Mr. Vicenti,
without looking around.
"Oh, yes. I couldn't find anything about him in the paper."
"I'm not surprised," said Mr. Vicenti in a low and level voice. "In those days, there were things they didn't put in."
"You go away, boy. You're meddling with things you don't understand," said Mr. Grimm. "You're imperiling your immortal soul and theirs. You go away, you bad boy."
Johnny stared. Then he looked back at the street, at the dancers and the scientists around the telephone box. A bit further along there was Stanley Roundway, in shorts that came down to his knees, showing a group of somewhat older dead how to play football. He had L and R stenciled on his football boots. Mr. Vicenti was staring straight ahead.
Said Johnny.
"I can't help you there,"
said Mr. Vicente. That sort of thing is up to you. He must have walked home. He didn't really remember, but he woke up in bed. Johnny wondered what the dead did on Sundays. Blackberry on Sundays went through some sort of boredom barrier and out the other side. Most people did what people traditionally do on Sundays, which was dress up neatly and get in the car and go for family worship at the Mega Super Saver Garden Centre just outside the town. There was a kind of tide of potted plants that were brought back to get killed off by the central heating in time for next week's visit. And the mall was locked up. There wasn't even anywhere to hang around.
The point about being dead in this town, said Wobbler, as they mooched along the towpath, is that it's probably hard to tell the difference.
Did anyone hear the radio last night? Said Johnny. No one had. He felt a bit relieved.
When I grow up, said Wobbler, I'm going to be out of here like a shot. Just you watch. That's what this place is. It's a place to come from. It's not a place to stay.
Where are you going to go then? Said Johnny.
There's a huge big world out there, said Wobbler. Mountains, America, Australia, tons of places. You told me the other day you'd probably get a job working at your uncle's place over on the trading estate, said Big Mac. Yes, well, I mean, all those places will be there, won't they, for when I get time to go, said Wobbler. I thought you were going to be a big man in computers, said Yolas. I could be, if I wanted.
If there's a miracle and you pass maths and English, you mean, said Big Mac.
I'm just more practically gifted, said Wobbler. You mean you just press keys until something happens? Well, often things do happen.
I'm going to join the army, said Big Mac. The SAS.
The flat feet and the asthma will be a big help there, then, said Wobbler. I can just see they'll want you to limp out and wheeze on terrorists.
I'm pretty certain I want to get a law degree and a medical degree, said Yolas, to keep the peace.
That's good. That way they won't be able to sue you if you chop the wrong bits off, said Big Mac.
No one really lost their temper. This was all part of hanging around.
What about you? Said Wobbler. What do you want to be?
Dunno, said Johnny.
Didn't you go to the careers evening last week?
Johnny nodded. It had been full of great futures. There was a great future in retail marketing. There was a great future in wholesale distribution. There was a great future in the armed forces, although probably not for Big Mac, who'd been allowed to hold a machine gun and had dropped it on his foot. But Johnny couldn't find a great future with any future in it. What I want to be, he said, is something they haven't got a name for yet.
Oh, yeah, said Wobbler. Like in 2 years' time, someone's going to invent the Virgil Splat. And when they start looking round for Virgil Splat operators, you're going to be first in the queue, right?
They went through the cemetery. The others, without saying anything, bunched up slightly. But there were no dead people around. You can't just hang around waiting for great futures. That's the point, Johnny murmured.
Hey, said Yolas in a dismally jolly voice. My mum says, why don't you guys come to church tonight?
It won't work, said Wobbler after a while. You say that every week.
She says it'll be good for you, especially Simon.
Simon? Said Wobbler.
Me, said Big Mac.
She says you need looking after, said Yolas.
I didn't know you were called Simon, said Wobbler.
Big Mac sighed. He had blackberry skins on his T-shirt, a suede haircut, great big boots, great big braces, and love and hat in biro on his knuckles. The E kept rubbing off. But for some reason, Yolas's mum thought he needed a proper home. Big Mac lived in dread that Bazza and Skaz, the only other skins in Blackberry, would find out and confiscate his official braces.
She said you're all growing up heathens, said Yolas.
Well, I'm going to a funeral at the Crem tomorrow, said Johnny. That's almost church.
Anyone important? Said Wobbler.
I'm not sure, said Johnny. Johnny was amazed that so many people had come to Thomas Atkins's funeral. But that was because they'd really come to the one before it. All there was for Atkins's was himself and a stiff-looking old man in a blazer from the British Legion and the nurse from Sunshine Acres. And the vicar, who did his best, but had never met Tommy Atkins, so had to put together his sermon out of a sort of kit of proper things to say, and then some recorded organ music, and that was it. The chapel smelt of new wood and floor polish. The three others kept looking at Johnny in an embarrassed way, as if they felt he shouldn't be there, but didn't know exactly how to put it. He heard a faint sound behind him, just as the recorded music started up. He turned around, and there were the dead, seated in rows. The alderman had taken his hat off and was sitting stiffly at attention. Even William Stickers had tried to look respectable. Solomon Einstein's hair stood out like a halo. The nurse was talking to the man in the blazer. Johnny leaned back so that he could speak to Mr. Fletcher.
"Why are you here?" he whispered. "It's allowed," said Mr. Fletcher. "We used to go to all the funerals in the cemetery. Help them settle in, make them welcome. It's always a bit of a shock. Oh, and seeing as you were here, we thought we'd see if we could make it. Mr. Vicenti said it was worth a try. We're getting better at it."
The nurse handed Tommy Atkinson's box to the British Legion man and walked out, waving at Johnny uncertainly as she went past. And then the vicar ushered the man through another door, giving Johnny another funny look. Outside, the October sun was shining weakly, but it was managing to shine. Johnny went outside and waited. Eventually, the man came out, holding two boxes this time.
Said Johnny, standing up.
Yes, lad. The lady from the home said you're doing a project for school.
Doing a project? It was amazing. If Saddam Hussein had said he was doing a school project on Kuwait, he'd have found life a lot easier.
Yes. Can I ask you some stuff?
Of course, yes.
The man sat down heavily on one of the benches. He walked with a limp and sat with one leg stretched out straight in front of him. Johnny was surprised to see that he was probably as old as Grandad, but he had that dried-out, suntanned look of a man who keeps himself fit and is probably still going to be captain of the bowls club when he's 80.
"Well, when Mr. Atkins said..." Johnny began. "I mean, he used to say that he was the one. I know about the Blackberry pals. I know they all got killed except him. But I don't think that's what he meant."
"You know about the Blackberry pals, do you? How?"
"Read it in an old newspaper."
"Oh, but you don't know about Tommy Atkins?"
"Well, yes, he..."
"No, I mean Tommy Atkins. I meant why he was so proud of the name. What the name meant."
"I don't understand that," said Johnny.
"What do they teach you in school these days?"
Johnny didn't answer. He could tell it wasn't really a question.
"You see, in the Great War, the First World War, when a new recruit joined the army, he had to fill in his paybook, yes? You know, name and address and that sort of thing. And to help them do it, the army did a kind of guide to how to fill it in. And on the guide, where it said name, they put Thomas Atkins. It was just a name. Just to show them that's where their name should be, like John Smith. But it became a sort of joke. Tommy Atkins came to mean the average soldier.
Like the man in the street?"
"Yes, very much like that. It was a nickname for a soldier, I do know that. Tommy Atkins, the British Tommy."
"So, in a way, all soldiers were Tommy Atkins?"
"Yes, I suppose you could put it like that. Of course, that's a rather fanciful way of..."
"But he was a real person. He smoked a pipe and everything."
"Well, I suppose the army used it because they thought it was a common sort of name. So there was bound to be a real Tommy Atkins somewhere. I know he was very proud of his name. I do know that."
"Was he the last man alive who fought in the war?"
"Oh, no. Good heavens, no. But he was the last one from around here, that's for certain. The last of the pals."
Johnny felt a change in the air.
"He was a strange old boy. I used to go and see him every year at..."
There was a noise that might be made if a handful of silence was stretched thin and then plucked like a guitar string. Johnny looked around. Now there were three people sitting on the bench. Tommy Atkins had his peaked hat on his knees. The uniform didn't really fit. He was still an old man, so his skinny neck stuck out of his collar like a tortoise's. He had an old-fashioned sort of face, one designed to wear a cloth cap and work in the rubber boot factory. He saw Johnny staring at him and winked and gave him the thumbs-up sign. Then he went back to gazing intently at the road leading into the car park. Behind Johnny, the dead filed quietly out of the building, the older ones coming through the wall, the younger ones still using the door out of habit. They didn't say anything. They just stood and looked expectantly towards the main road. We're marching through the cars with the Blackberry Pals.